بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله وكفى وسلام على عباده الذين اصطفى أما بعد. So for tonight, our topic of discussion has to do with copyrights, copyright infringement, piracy of software, and that sort of thing. Now, almost everyone has probably come across a book or portions of a book that were copied, or software that was pirated and resold, especially if you go back home to our countries. You know, you'll go to a store and you'll find the entire store filled with CDs and cheap plastic, you know, covers, and all types of software that can be bought. Or perhaps you've come across audio that was downloaded when it shouldn't have been, or copied and distributed when it shouldn't have, when that shouldn't have happened. And perhaps this could be at work or at home. Maybe someone set it up on your computer, or you come across software at work that that was copied. So the question often comes up that from the Islamic perspective, from the Islamic point of view, what is the ruling on making copies and using this type of software or material, books or anything else? And does it matter what it's for? So if it's for personal use or if it's being distributed, does that make a difference? Or, you know, if I'm not doing the actual copying, but if someone gives me material which has been copied, then can I use it or not? So tonight, inshallah, we'll be looking at these issues. First of all, under the Islamic laws regarding buying and trading, and they are very detailed, technically, it is not allowed to restrict the disposal or transfer of something after it has been bought. So for the seller to place restrictions on the sale and to say that, okay, I'm selling you this item, but after you buy it from me, you're not allowed to, you know, do X, Y, and Z with it, is not really permissible. So valid ownership or possession of an item or of property, Islamically, gives you the fundamental right to dispose of it, to transfer it to whom you will, to whoever you will, under your own conditions, because now it is yours. So basically the traditional understanding was that once you own something, once you have bought something and you are the sole owner of that item or of that thing, you can copy it, you can duplicate it, you can use it in any way you like, you can show it to whoever you like, you can give it to anyone, basically you can do whatever you like with it. And conditional selling, so selling an item with conditions attached, was not allowed. So the sale would not be considered to be permissible or to be valid, because a person loses his or her right over something once ownership is transferred. Right. So once the ownership of an item is transferred, so if I sell something to someone else, if I take this recorder and I sell it to someone else, then I've lost whatever rights I had entitled or associated with this product, with this item. Now, but because I don't have any ownership, I don't have any rights over it. So therefore, I can't dictate to the person, to the new owner, as to how they should use it. So this traditional understanding in Islamic law appears to clash with the concept of intellectual property. So in previous times, the concept of ownership was confined to mostly to tangible objects. So objects that you can see and you can feel and you can transfer them, or you know, that actually exist. And the concept of intellectual property, you know, didn't really exist, because this entire notion of intellectual property, which is that a person who applies his or her, you know, mental labor to invent something, is the owner of the fruits of the labor, right? So that's the concept of intellectual property. So if a person has invented a particular instrument, a particular tool, he or she does not only own the instrument or the item itself, but they also own the formula or the blueprint that was used for the first time to invent it. So they have the right to use that, and others don't have the right to transfer it and to use it to create the same thing. So therefore, nobody can use it without their permission. So similarly, if a person has written a book, that person is the exclusive owner of the right to publish it, and nobody else has the right to publish it, that book without the author's permission. So this concept is termed as intellectual property. Now, owners of such rights can sell them to others, like other tangible objects. And the law of copyrights, or the laws surrounding intellectual property, have come into existence in order to secure such rights and to give legal protection to this kind of property. Because, you know, we can all understand that there is value now associated with things which are intangible, things which you cannot necessarily, you know, feel and touch or, you know, pick up, but at the same time, there is value associated with them. So, for example, domain names, right? So, www.whatever.com, right? So, that has a lot of value associated with it. So, if somebody, registers a name, a .com name, which generally, you know, registers for what, $8 a year or whatever, $8, $10 a year, and actually becomes something which is very popular, the name becomes very popular, or it's an easy name to remember, right? Like, I don't know, books.com, money.com, paper.com, cars.com, right? So names that are very popular, easy to remember, then they become valuable all of a sudden. So even though these names are not, you know, some things that you can actually touch and feel, and actually people have made a business out of this, right? So there's actually an entire field of, you know, in a industry, you could say, of people who all they do is deal in virtual real estate online, right? Not even real estate, just the names, right? So they'll think of, okay, what names are coming up, right? What names are going to be popular in the future? And they'll register them for $8 a year, for $10 a year, and then they'll resell them for like $2,000, for $2,500, for $3,000, or even more, right? So we can see clearly, that's one example, that intangibles now have value associated with them. So of course this is a new phenomenon, and therefore this concept is not something which is expressly, you know, addressed or mentioned in the Quran or in the Sunnah of the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam. And with anything that is new, any new concept, the basis of accepting it or rejecting it, if it's not addressed in the original sources of Islamic jurisprudence, of Islamic law, then it can only be inferred from the general principles that are laid down in the Sharia, right? Intellectual property is not something you'll find addressed, for example, in the original books of fiqh, right? Or addressed in a hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So because it can only be inferred based upon the general principles which have been laid down by the Sharia, the view of the jurists, of the scholars, may differ when applying these principles to the new situations, right? Because there's nothing definite, right? It's all based on reasoning and it's on analogy and so on. There can be different views, and there's a wide scope for differences of opinion, as we see with anything new that comes up. So the question of intellectual property has also been subject to such discussions among the contemporary Muslim scholars. There is a group of scholars, I'm not sure as to how large it is, or it's probably not the majority, but Allah knows best. And according to them, the concept of ownership in the Sharia, in Islamic law, is confined only to tangible objects. And they say that there is no precedent in the Holy Quran, in the Sunnah of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, or the juristic views of the earlier jurists, where an intangible object was a subject of private ownership, or to sale and purchase and transfer and so on. So they say that, you know, this concept of owning rights and things like that, it's not really, you know, it can be proven. It's not really something that exists Islamically. So therefore, this entire concept is void. From an Islamic point of view, it just doesn't exist. And further, they also argue that knowledge, from an Islamic point of view, especially when we're dealing with books, is not the property of an individual, right? So knowledge is something which should be shared with everyone, is not owned by any one person, and a person cannot prevent others from acquiring knowledge or sharing knowledge. Whereas the concept behind intellectual property leads to the monopoly of some individual's knowledge, which is something which cannot ever be accepted by Islam. So therefore, this group of scholars argue that, you know, there's no such thing as copyright, there's no such thing as patents, there's no such thing as intellectual property. Now, the second view is a view of contemporary scholars who say that the concept of intellectual property is actually acceptable according to the Sharia. And they give a few reasons, and they say that, first of all, there's no express provision in the Quran or the Sunnah which restricts the ownership to tangible objects only, Right? There's nothing that explicitly states that if you own something, it has to be tangible, otherwise you can't own it. And basically they say that you can own a thing which is intangible, but that has value associated with it. They also argue that the laws surrounding intellectual property don't really restrict the scope of knowledge. Rather, they say that in no way do they restrict the scope of knowledge, because the laws surrounding copyright, intellectual property, it does not prevent a person from reading a book. Right? It doesn't prevent a person from reading the book or from making a new invention based on knowledge that a person acquires for his individual benefit. But rather, the laws are there to prevent a person from taking something, taking the efforts of another person and using them from commercially. Right? So taking the knowledge or something, an invention, a piece of work that a person has, you know, invested time and effort and energy and money into, and then using that to basically make money off it and to gain benefit from it by selling it to others and by distributing it to others. And they argue that any other person should not be allowed to reap the monetary fruits of the labors of another person without their permission. So basically, they also argue that the author of a book, right, who has spent night and day to write a book, right, who has put in the effort and the research and so on, is the best person who deserves its publication for commercial purposes. Now, if every other person is allowed to publish that book, to make copies and to distribute it without the author's permission, then it will certainly violate the rights or the efforts of the author, and the laws surrounding copyright protect the author from such a violation of rights. It's also said that, you know, times have changed. So before the invention of the modern printing press, you know, there were no other means of publishing a book except for making handwritten copies. Right, so the printing press was actually, you know, a huge. It brought about a huge transformation in terms of communication, right? Because in the past, the only way you could have copies of books made again were basically to have scribes or you know, people who would write them again, and there was no means of making mass copies very quickly and very cheaply of written works. So, if a writer were to produce a book, then a scribe might have spent, you know, years copying the book just to produce one copy of the book. And at that time, the scribe, the person who was doing the writing, was actually in service of the scholar or the author who was the author of the book, or who was the one who wrote the book. And they would make, you know, the scribe would try to make several copies. And if it wasn't for that, then the book would be limited to the original copy, and it would actually be at risk to being lost forever if the original copy was destroyed. So in essence, copying the book was not a transgression against the author, but rather it was a favor, right? It was something which was positive for the author, because he was serving, the person who was copying the book was actually serving the author and spreading his efforts and knowledge and allowing other people to benefit from it, which would be very difficult if there was only one copy and the original copy was destroyed, then the original author would, you know, all of his efforts would go to waste. But after the invention of the printing press, right, the tables changed, right? The tables turned, and the exact opposite became true. Because now what happened, the author may spend, you know, a good portion of his life or a long time writing a beneficial book, publishing it, selling it, and making all this effort, and another person could simply take a copy, right, publish it by modern means of printing, photocopying, and could actually start selling it as competition with the author, or distributed for free, and thus the efforts of the author would be wasted. And the same could be said about inventors as well. And the real danger is that this would then discourage people who have knowledge and who are smart, you know, intelligent people. It would discourage them from inventing and writing things, because you know, they would see that they put all this effort, and as soon as they released it, it was stolen as soon as it appeared, and the people who had put no effort started making, you know, gaining benefit from it, and this would actually harm knowledge and research and invention. So therefore, they said that the author and inventor should have the rights with regard to them, with regard to that which they have written and invented. Now, to this argument about, you know, conditions on sale, right? So putting a condition and saying that, you know, Islamically you're not allowed to do that. The scholars say that when you buy a book, a CD or other material, you have purchased a physical copy of something that someone else owns the intellectual copyrights to, right? So you have the ownership-based right to use this physical copy. This physical copy that you have, you can use it as you wish. However, owning something does not necessarily give you the right to make another copy of it, right? Owning something doesn't necessarily give you the right to make another copy of it. And they give an example of money, right? So if you own a $100 bill, right, it doesn't give you the right to start making copies of the $100 bill. And I think most people would agree with that, right? Because you would get, you know, the consequences of that. And everyone knows that you don't have the right to do that. And they say that the danger of breaking these laws is actually quite serious, because the Prophet has said that wrongs, right, or wrongdoings or wrongs against others are darkness on the day of judgment, on the day of resurrection. And by doing this, you're actually wronging others and you're taking away the rights of others. And there are serious warnings about this in the Quran and the Sunnah. So therefore, the second group of scholars says that it is not permissible to make copies. And actually, you know, when you purchase, especially software, right, and you install it on your computer, you know, most people don't read the agreement, right? I don't think anyone reads the terms and conditions, right? But you're actually, when you click on "I agree" and you click next, right, you're actually agreeing to, you know, to that this is accepting the conditions that this is one license to install one copy of the software, that you're not going to make illegal, you know, copies, you're not going to distribute, and all of those things. And Islamically, we know the importance of staying true to our word and to honoring our agreements and all of that. So making copies, when you buy the box, right? Because a lot of times they'll have that these conditions on the box as well. And by opening the box and by installing the software, you're actually agreeing to these terms. Some scholars have said that it is impermissible. It is haram if you're selling it to others, but if it's just for yourself, for your personal use, then it is allowed. They've also said that single copies are permissible for personal use, but it is better not to do it. So if someone is making a personal, you know, a copy for personal use, then they say it is permissible, but it's preferable not to do it. When it comes to books, you know, the fair dealing provisions in Canada, or fair use provisions in the U.S. sort of cover this, right? So if you want to make copies for your own research or for educational purposes, for your own self, you're allowed to do that, though granted not, probably not for the whole book. If you know that something has been copied, right? If you know that there is software that has been pirated and your friend gives you a CD and says that, hey, here's, you know, a copy of Microsoft Word, you can take it and you can install it, can you use it? So most of the scholars would say no, because you're actually supporting something that is impermissible. So even though the copy has been made, right? The copy has been made by someone else. Or let's say audio has been uploaded onto YouTube, or a video has been uploaded, or something has been uploaded on the internet, and it has been copied illegally, and now it is available. Is it permissible to use that or not? So most of them would say that no, it's, you are supporting something which is impermissible, and it could be argued that copying, the flip side could be argued as well, that copying in itself is impermissible, but if it's already copied, then there's no harm in using it for personal use, because, you know, the agreement is between the person who's actually purchased it the first time around, right? So if somebody broke that agreement and copied it, then for you to have possession of that or to access that is not illegal. However, then the flip argument could also be made that if you have established that, you know, copying is wrong and it's like stealing, then using proceeds or objects that have been obtained incorrectly or illegally should also be prohibited, right? So if somebody has bought something or has stolen something from somewhere, right, and comes and gives it to you, then by using that item or by receiving it, you're actually indirectly also supporting that person in the wrong that they did. And most people would agree, pretty much everyone would agree, that it is not permissible to use something which has been acquired from an impermissible way. However, that being said, to the best of my understanding, possession of copyrighted or pirated material is not illegal, right? So you won't get arrested or charged if you have a book, let's say, that has been copied, right? Or if you have in your home a CD which was pirated. However, if you are the ones making these copies, or if you are the one who's selling it or distributing it, right? So if you're the one who's doing the reproduction or distribution, then that is illegal. So there's some ambiguity regarding this, but from what we know, what we can see, the safest route is not to use any of it, not to access it, not to copy it, not to do anything. Just play by the rules. We see a little bit of leniency on the part of the scholars in terms of using it for personal use, and that could be applied in some ways to the fact that it is not illegal to possess such material. But the best thing would be to avoid it as much as possible. Now, they say that if a person does not know if something has been copied, so if you go to work, right, and you have computers on a network, or you have a computer and software has been installed on it, and you don't know how it was acquired, then you don't actually have to go out of your way and find out if it was pirated or not. You can take it at face value and use it. But if you come across a situation where you have control over something, you have the choice of using it or not, and you know that it has been acquired unlawfully, then in that case you should not use it. Any questions?
Well, Joseph is very thought-provoking, but I'm not sure whether I agree with the legal aspect as opposed to the Islamic aspect, because he seems to waver from the legal aspect to the Islamic aspect. I'm not sure whether I got the answer for all my questions.
Well, what are the questions?
Well, if I were to buy, say, for example, Microsoft software,
right?
I paid probably about $600 for that, for example. And I want to go to my son who's going to school or install on his computer. The only way I can do it is, say for example, if I say it's only one computer going to be used, if I want to install on that one by doing some sort of a pirated copy, is it allowed or not?
Right.
So
it goes back to what agreement you have when you purchase that software, right?
Well, let's say the agreement was you can be used on only one computer.
All right. So what do you think the answer is to that?
Sorry?
What do you think the answer is to that?
I mean, say for example, if it's not for me personally, let's say for example, I'm going to some poor Muslim brothers and sisters.
Right.
How does it work? I mean, I'm saving them the money instead of them going and searching for $600, which they can't afford. Right. I'm giving them the copy.
Right. But
so where does it come here?
Well, the other consideration would be, is there any harm that's occurring to the producer of the software? And are you violating the terms?
I don't think Microsoft is going to have any harm in me producing thousands of copies.
No, but you paid for the use of one. You have to pay for the use of
one. I agree, but my intention of giving to other Muslim users to help, they can't afford that software. I'm giving it to them. So where does it come in here?
Well, if you're
not giving, you're not giving it to them, you're keeping your copy.
Yeah.
If you give your copy,
I'm giving a copy to them.
Yeah. That's
a pirated copy to them.
Well, if you really want to help them, you can buy it for $600 and give it to them.
I can afford to do that for everything.
Then don't help them then. If you
that's wrong. You can't say that.
No, because look, if it comes down to something which is incorrect,
yeah,
right, then it's like saying, well, okay, I'm going to steal from others and give it to someone to help.
Well, it's better to steal from someone else than to steal from a Muslim brother.
No, if you say, okay, I'm going to go rob a bank because I want to help a brother who's in need.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just being crude.
I understand.
I think I find something missing in methodology. For example, Islam allows private property.
Right.
Now, the question arises, so-called intellectual property, patent, or something, or whatever, is equivalent, according to fiqh, to their private property, which was a land, or gold, or something like that. Is it equivalent?
That's what the scholars have said, the second group of scholars.
So if it is equivalent, the second question then arises, that how much limit it has. And only the person who contested on the limit of private property was Abu Sa'd al-Khudri. He contested that Islam does not, should not allow unlimited property because other people get exploited. Yeah. The third point, which I think in Islam, from Islamic concept point of view, will be that is Microsoft is the owner of the knowledge, or is the scientist or the computer engineer or whoever it was who tried to evolve that, and this is the guy who is using their intellectual labor to make a lot of money.
They've addressed that actually and said that if an inventor or a writer has an agreement, right?
Yeah, but let's come to agreement. These agreements, so-called agreements.
Right.
Now we have to validate Islamic values of them too.
Right.
That agreement which you said, we said, I accept it.
Right.
You know, is it the conscious that you read it? Or you don't want to read it because you don't understand it? That language which they have written it.
Right, but the onus should be on you that if you're saying I agree, that you know what you're agreeing to, right?
That's fine. Okay, so yeah. We can agree that we have broken the covenant,
right,
which we are supposed to keep.
Right.
But to begin with the legality, which I raised the initial question of private property, limit, it's equivalent to intellectual property, those answers have to be answered. I mean, those questions have to be answered before we make judgments, you know, from Greek point of view, that it is legal or illegal, that as he's raising point, and it will be controversial. I know that.
No, I mean, these are issues which have been dealt with like 30 years ago.
And I was given my cup of $1 for one patent.
Okay.
I have only 5 patents and $5.
Okay.
The rest of the benefit which gets is company's intellectual property.
Okay.
Is it a fair? But obviously, I work for it, and I wrote an agreement that I work. But at that time, nobody asked me that what will be the situation of patent when you have the patent. But when I found out that this is the situation, you can't do much about it.
Right.
So it is, you know, legally, as brother said, legally the way it is manipulated and it is done, that it is something which probably a common part of view is imposed on us, and probably we have to follow it. But does it have the moral value? Should we reconsider it? Should we challenge it?
Right. I think from what you're saying, I think what it boils down to is, inherently, if something is felt to be or understood to be unfair, right, should you continue going along with it or should you challenge it?
I mean, this implies not only this.
Right.
If a king or somebody has, you know, immense wealth,
right,
and we say, okay, Islam allows that wealth,
right,
and we don't challenge it, we don't. And as far as I read, only one person, Abdul Bukhari, he only challenged this concept. That, you know, if it becomes too much, if it becomes, you know, that other people are suffering because of that,
right,
then you have to take action.
But does challenging it mean that you're allowed to contravene the laws or the covenants that you have made? Because you can still challenge it without contravening them. Right? It's one thing to say that I don't agree with it and I'm going to challenge it because it's inherently unfair.
No, I don't challenge it. But what I'm saying is, yeah, that the issues which needs to be addressed, but by not implying the, by having the traditional concept, but making them equivalent or non-equivalent. For example, this intellectual property or Microsoftware is equivalent to the land which a worker or Zahid owns in some place.
Right. So it comes down to how much is too much, right? Where do you draw the line? Where too much of personal or property owned by an entity becomes a harm for others, right, or becomes damaging the rights of others.
Yeah. Well, I'm not entirely sure whether that's the inference you can get from what Srinivasa was saying. Let me go to the second. I have two more questions.
Sure.
It's kind of, it always bothers me. I have bought CDs from the sheikh whom I have learned, okay? Some of the CDs said for the tapes in those days to begin with, you may not be allowed to copy. Now, just to promote for him the sale, cut, whatever it is, it's fair. But if I want to give it to someone else, say for example, go travel somewhere, they like the CD, they can't access this tape or whatever it is, I make a copy and give it to them. How is it in the Islamic point of view? So is that particular sheikh restricting the knowledge or is looking for the money? So it's a big problem.
Yeah. I think what needs to be taken into account is the fact that when a work is produced, right, there's actually time and effort that goes into it. Right? And it's unfair. And we're not talking about corporations now, we're talking about individuals, right? And I mean, we see this in the Islamic you know, literature and Islamic media industry as well, that there are, you know, a few companies, growing number now perhaps, right, that will produce content, they're publishers, and, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into producing stuff, right, and then marketing it and bringing it to market and selling it, all those things. And if, you know, if it's going to be reproduced for whatever reason, right, so whether people don't have access to it or whatever it may be, then it's really taking away from the motivation to some extent, but also to taking away from, you know, the costs and the efforts that they put into it, right? And it discourages then others from getting into it. That's exactly precisely the point
that
the scholars have mentioned.
Yeah, but this is given to others for purpose of dawah, right? This is purpose of education.
If they've produced it with that intention, right, purely with that intention, and have given it for free or have not put, and there are books like that, right, and there are who will say that there is no copyright on this, right, that there's no copyright and you can make copies and so on, then that's fine, right? But if people have put effort into, for example, producing the CD, and I mean, you got the CD from somewhere as well, right? Like you bought the CD or you had, right, like it was made available to you, and that process of making it available had, you know, costs involved in it, right? And if you do this once, right, that's fine, but let's say everyone starts doing that, then, you know, how are they going to make up for the...
Let's put this, let's make a point here. I know that, and you know that Microsoft produced this. We all know that they have been copied.
Right.
They have been distributed with people, and they have been bought. But Microsoft is still billionaire and billionaire and billionaire. Same as the Apple.
Right.
So, where we draw the line? I mean, still Microsoft imposes me this moral restriction on me. While it has immense,
but you don't have to use Microsoft products. Then don't use it if you don't like it.
This is an example.
This is the most example. You're not taking.
No, I understand.
This is
I understand.
Example. Dominant example. Yeah. Apple, and this is, for example, Apple. What it does, you might have heard in the news. What it is, how much it is pays people in third world countries,
right,
and how much money it makes in the market.
Right.
So these are much deeper moral questions than simply saying that I accepted that and signed their document.
No, I understand, but it comes back to the point, can you still make that challenge, like, you know, take the fight against this, against these injustices, without actually getting into these agreements and without actually using those products? I mean, if it's so bad, then why are we using those products? Right? I mean, if Apple is really treating, I mean, if it's a question of ethics, then why are we using Apple products, right? Or why are we using Microsoft Word then? I mean, there's... you know, OpenOffice, for example, right, which is compatible with Microsoft documents. So why are we just using that? That's free, that's open source.
Well, I think I have to give a specific example to explain this a little better.
Yeah.
I do cardiac MRI.
Okay.
There's only one software which will make me run the cine images on presentations. I have to use that software.
Right.
I downloaded it to my computer. Someone else gave it to me. I still use it. And why am I wrong in doing that? I don't have no contacts with the company who produced it, who invented the software for the speed I want.
Right.
So what do I do now?
Right. So as I had mentioned, there's different ways of looking at it, right? So one of the ways you could look at it is to say that, okay, if you didn't actually make that copy, right, if you're not the one who made the...
Basically, it wasn't intention, right? So
if you're not the one who made the copy, I mean, there's different views that I mentioned, right? So one was that you can use it for personal use, right? Secondly, if you've not made the copy yourself, right, if you've come into possession of copyrighted material or pirated material, then it's not the same as actually making the copy. Right? So there are definitely gray areas here, right? I'm not saying that it's black and white. I mean, there's still the first group of scholars who said there's no such thing exists. I mean, you can go just follow them and all the problems will be solved, right?
I'll tell you one more thing. Yeah. There are lots of Islamic books you can get here. They have copyrights. But lots of people photocopy it, give it. For what? For education purposes, for knowledge purposes.
Right.
You cannot stop them saying, well, you did it because you didn't get the copyright from them or you didn't get the permission from the author. Like, lots of books here we have them.
Another perfect example of Islamic is there was Alif, program Alif.
Yeah.
That was the first one I came across.
Yeah.
And at that time we bought to encourage and so forth. But eventually it collapsed and now it is online. They're trying to develop it online. Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, from Islamic point of view, I think the people who are motivated, they have so much software and most of it is free.
Yeah. I think there's probably, you know, I think there needs to be recognition on both sides, right? So I think we have to recognize that if someone has put effort into something, right? And I know publishers, right? Islamic book publishers, they are not making money. They're not living as millionaires, okay? These people are having a tough time surviving, right? And publishing their books and the costs that are associated nowadays.
Cost to a big company is different than the individual.
Perhaps. But then the question becomes, how do you define a big company? How do you define, you know, when too big, you know, it's too big.
I mean, those are the law the government should define.
Right, those are things that need to be.
A person who is developing a software in his garage,
right.
That is a different. Or with 20 people employed, then Microsoft or Apple.
Right, but the danger is that if we take it to ourselves, that we are going to define how big is, you know, which big is too big, right? Then, you know, you can basically decide whenever you don't want to pay for something, you can just be like, yeah, well, you know, I think they're making too much money, so I'm going to use it for free.
Right. If I buy a car, I pay GM or Toyota or money.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that I can't allow my son or my daughter or other people to use it.
No, because you have the right to use it, and that use can be transferred. However, if you start using the technology that exists in the car and start replicating the technology,
I mean,
and using it, then that would be, if it's going against the patents, then that will be.
Knife was invented, did it impose a restriction? Not
sorry?
To use that knife or some knife.
If there's a patent on it, right? If there's a patent on something, then you know you're not allowed to use that.
Traditionally,
right?
There was not something.
Exactly, and that's the point, right? That traditionally these concepts don't exist, right? But later on, because of advancements in industry and communication, these issues become very important. Right? Because, like I said, for example, again, going back to Islamic books, I know Islamic book publishers personally, right? And I know they're not making money, right? They're not living lavish lifestyles, and they're putting a lot of effort, right, into printing, into typesetting, into editing, and all of these things. A lot of time into actually writing these books or translating these books, right, that they're translating from Arabic, for example. And it's not fair, and they can't continue if every time, if they just print 100 copies, the next thing you know, those are the only 100 copies that go, and then, you know, everyone else is copying those copies. So there has to be a balance somewhere. And how do we define that balance? If we just take it upon ourselves, every time, you know, we assume that someone is big enough, we could just be like, well, it's okay to copy from them. So that's not, you know, so I agree that there can be, you know, there may be instances where people are being taken advantage of by large corporations. But I don't think that gives us the permission to actually go ahead and just doing whatever we like, simply because we think they're too big. Yes, we can challenge it, right? We can challenge it, but at the same time, we need to adhere, if we believe that this concept exists, or we could just say that it doesn't exist. You could go follow the first group of scholars who've said that it's just not true, it just doesn't exist, and that's it. Then, you know, you can do whatever you like. However, the other question also comes that if you're living somewhere and you're agreeing to follow the laws and so on, then you're doing something which is illegal, and that's not actually really permitted either. So,
software companies which are offering. There was one NetWare and places like that.
Well, there are free software.
Software, antivirus software, or free
software. Just mention OpenOffice. OpenOffice is a free software.
OpenOffice is completely free.
The Linux operating system is an open operating system. So there are many open software. People have done that.
They're not easy to access.
They are easy to access.
My compatibility and all.
The idea of having a company after behind a software makes it more reliable and more updated and less crashing, etc., etc. That's the thing.
I think it's a larger thing than just we can give some sort of a judgment on this. I'm not really sure how much it applies to certain specific scenarios. If there is a case, nobody can buy a Kia car or a Hyundai car. They copy just the Benz and other models all the time.
But they do it. Let's get this right. If they're copying it, you think they will be doing it illegally? No, they will get sued right away, right? So whatever they're doing it illegally, right? So first of all, even if they're copying each other.
Let me tell you more politically. I don't know whether it's recording somewhere or...
Yeah, it's being broadcast live.
Well, I have a specific example, a very good example. You cannot argue with it. You don't know where to draw the line in certain things.
Well, what I'm saying is this. Look, I'm not making any of this stuff up. Right,
I'm not arguing in terms of the knowledge or in terms of what the standing is. For me, it's a very blurred concept.
What I'm saying is that the scholars who have looked at it, they have thought through many of these or of all of these things. Right? These issues were discussed many years ago and have been looked at again and again, not by one person. I'm talking about entire fatwa committees in the Middle East, in Saudi, in Pakistan, Mufti Usmani, all these people. Whatever I've said, they've actually thought through all of these things and come up with that, right? So for us, you know, to think that, well, you know, it's just something that, you know, has just been concocted, like that, it's not like that, right? I mean, there's a lot of effort. I'm not saying for myself, I'm just saying a lot of effort and thought has gone into it. Yeah, and there may be issues, right? For example, I mean, even here, right, we have laws that govern, for example, you know, anti-competitive behavior, right, or monopolies and things like that, and antitrust, and and the government does step in when they feel that, you know, when it's going a bit too far. Granted, you know, that the bar that they have set may be too high for us, and we might think that it should be lowered, right, for different reasons. But again, what it comes down to is that this, first of all, is an issue of concern, number one. Number two, it is an evolving issue, right? So there's a different dimension to it. So for example, when these scholars have sat down maybe 20 years ago to discuss this, maybe Microsoft wasn't where it is today, right? And Apple probably wasn't where it is today. So yes, these things are changing and they're evolving. But what it does tell us that it's not something that we can totally disregard or feel like we have a free pass to do whatever we like, because these are issues that potentially can have implications on us, our deeds, and they can have implications on others as well.
Okay, for a practical purpose of a day-to-day thing, let me get one thing straight before I leave this, at least the take-home message.
Right.
So if there's a CD or lecture on some Islamic literature, and it says, not allowed to produce copies without author's permission, then you can't do it.
I wouldn't do it.
That's fine.
Personally, I wouldn't do it.
This is a good topic.
Yeah.
They're stimulating because you should be thinking about these, although I'm not sure you know exactly what the solutions are.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't claim to know. I don't claim to know the solutions.
But
I was just.
I think it would be good.
I was just the messenger bringing them.
And it is the thing which I'm against, and I think, is the lobbying. First, on internet technology, CIA and American army was sitting there for 30 years. Then it came up out in the 80s, and then bigger companies are setting up. But these small technologies, which third world countries were like Pakistan, people are now enjoying them more because of their cellular phone and all that. And they have, for example, you call a country like Pakistan, the first thing you hear on the telephone is either azan or something like that. So there are some benefits to it for people who can do it.
No, they have to extend a little bit more. Say that I bought a tape from lecture point of view. I'll go back to the same point because it's very, very difficult. I bought it for myself, okay? Now I invite 10 other brothers to listen to that tape. How do you justify that?
You give it to others and you let them listen to it and pass it on.
Well, it's as simple as giving a copy to them.
No, it's not.
Well, it's the same purpose. I'm making extra effort to make buying another new tape, copying it, and giving the others and bringing 100 people to listen to it.
Because you know why? Because if you give it to someone else and you would like to hear it again and you don't have access to it, you might actually go by and buy another copy. Or if somebody else hears it and they like it and they know they have to pass it on to someone else, they may go back and buy another copy.
My intention is different.
Which
my intention would be to educate others if you say that you cannot, you're not allowed to copy, make a copy at all, but I would rather invite 100 people to come and listen to the tape.
Right, but that's, that could be your intention, and if you were giving the lecture, and that could be very noble on your part. But we don't know.
No, I sympathize with the Islamic scholars.
Right.
I really respect them. I have discussed this with the Sheikh personally as well. I know, and it's for living as well. I appreciate all that. Mm-hmm. But it's a very broad subject. I don't know the answer to this. So, it's my personal opinion.
Alhamdulillah, the very vast majority of the lectures of the Sheikhs throughout Africa. Alhamdulillah. As for the books,
We have bought tapes as well.
Yeah.
We have personally bought what you listen to so that we keep on memorizing it at the same point.
For instance, now you can just go to Slamway, for Arabic. You can just go to Slamway. You literally get thousands of lectures for so many sheikhs. They're free. They've been recorded to be broadcast, to be just like given broadcast. Alhamdulillah,
we had a big collection. We just gave it to someone else before we came here. They have the record notes as well.
And whichever school they are from, did they have lectures on their website?
No, it is there. But even now, if you go to that particular website, you have paper to listen to those lectures.
But I think really, I don't know. Well,
it's worth it. You cannot even get the knowledge. You pay $1 million and it's not.
For me, the bottom line is if you are breaking the covenant and you're going against Islamic objection, then I wouldn't be going. If one is doing that by accepting it and then not following it, then one is broken the covenant and with Islam stops us not to do it. Otherwise, this is something which I don't have any sympathies with these big companies. People need to be educated, people, and any technology should not be monopolized. But as for the common part, I'm a little bit afraid of that.
There are lots of legal points. As Salim Saab says, you don't know how to draw a line. I mean, forget about this copyright business. This is a physical CD or lecture or whatever it is, or software, PPC, or whatever it is. There are certain rules which apply on land, does not apply on sea. If someone does the same mistake on sea while they're on ship in international waters, no rule applies. So this is the reason why the lots of crimes which happen on cruise ships cannot be taken by the police. This is fact. The lots of things you do on land, if you do the same whatever problem here, in terms of legality of the land you're living in, if you do it on the sea, nobody can question you. Where do you draw the line? So we have to go from the Islamic point of view. We cannot go by rule of the land.
But if the rule of the land is not contravening Islamic laws, then you have a responsibility to follow that as well.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. That's why we all pay tax. That's why we all pay lots of things.
So wouldn't this fall under that as well?
There are lots of things. Lots of crimes, lots of things. Say, for example, if you break into some sort of a website where you come from somewhere else.
You hack into someone.
Yeah, you hack into something you're not responsible for.
No, you are.
Well, you are, but they can find it. But they can't legally, there's no way you can.
Oh, yes. But depending on where you are, don't try it, please, you'll get arrested.
No, I'm not a computer expert. I'm just giving an example for this one as a
Do you have an idea? Where did they get that Mega Upload guy from?
You heard about that, right? MegaUpload.com?
Mm-hmm.
India.
No, he was in
New Zealand.
He was in New Zealand, yeah.
If they win, they got him back to the States, and I'm at 15 years.
You got convicted already?
Yeah.
Really?
That's what happened.